Welcome to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast, where SearchHealthIT.com editors interview leading experts on IT strategies for healthcare leaders.
Hello, and thank you for joining us. I'm Jean Degarian, reporter with SearchHealthIT. Today we're speaking with Dr. Timothy McDonald and Dr. David Mayer. Together, they co-chair the Institute for Patient Safety Excellence, part of the University of Illinois at Chicago. The Institute has received a $3 million federal grant to evaluate how hospitals respond to events involving patient harm. Tim, Dave, thanks for being here.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Tell me a little bit about the program you've developed, the Communication and Disclosure Program. This is something that you've had ongoing for a couple of years now, right?
We've just finished our fourth year, and we put the official comprehensive process together and launched it in April of 2006.
What was the driver behind doing this program?
Well, there were many drivers, not the least of which was the sort of ethical imperative that was building up in the hearts and souls of a lot of the docs that were working here that had been involved with patient harm events. And the system wasn't geared to allow them to be fully honest and principled in their workings with their patients. There were a couple of cases in particular that really gnawed at the consciences of a lot of the docs. And so the Department of Safety and Risk Management, along with the medical staff, eventually was able to convince the Board of Trustees to allow us to create a comprehensive response to patient harm that in certain instances would involve apology, full disclosure, and in certain particular cases, early offer of remedy to try to start the process of closure for patients and families as well as the providers.
What are some of the results you've seen in the last couple of years from this program? How have you collected data? What did you do to reach the outcomes you wanted to?
We built our outcome analysis around the different elements of the process, which is known as the seven pillars. Process. We published an article in the journal Quality and Safety in Healthcare called Responding to Patient Safety Incidents, the Seven Pillars. And some of the elements of the seven pillars include the reporting, the internal reporting of near misses, unsafe conditions, and adverse events, the investigations of those events, the communication internally as well as with patients and families, full disclosure when the care has been inappropriate, and then linking a whole process around lessons learned around some of these harm events, and then, again, collecting data on all of that sort of piece of it. And that's the concept around the seven pillars. So the improvements that we've seen in our data include a significant increase in the number of reports that we're able to get as early warning signs of things that may be going wrong in the institution. And that has led to enormous numbers, over 100 specific process improvements with our informatics system, which we have a very robust one. A lot of it is geared around making that better designed and more useful and providing better quality and safety. But it's also the process has allowed us to have a lot of communications with patients and families around harm events. And so we've had hundreds of those kinds of communications, and we've had over 60 full disclosures of medical errors that have resulted in harm, many of which we've been able to provide early offers and get quick resolution on. What a lot of people are interested in is our data around liability, and by creating a more principled approach, we've cut the number of claims associated with the institutions under our control in half. And we've also seen substantial reductions in our medical malpractice premium along with that. But more importantly, we think we have saved a lot of lives and prevented a lot of patient safety events, which is one of the big reasons why we've also seen that reduction in claims.
You think you're sort of starting to hit the nail on the head when you say that about saving lives and then bringing more patients and doctors into the communication process. What happens to doctors and to patients when information isn't disclosed and communication sort of falters?
For years, we haven't been so open and honest and forthright. In fact, the whole concept of this wall of silence that's gone up historically between not only the professional healthcare providers, but also our patients has been devastating, not only for the patients who many times believe those errors when they don't have that open and honest disclosure. They think that what happened was their fault, and they feel tremendous guilt for long periods of time because the closure hasn't occurred. On the caregiver side, it could be just as dramatic, and new data over the last couple of years has been showing that care providers who are involved in an air and aren't supported, if it truly was a system or process issue, an error that could have really occurred to anybody, if they're not supported, their chance of clinical depression goes up significantly, and their chance of making another error because they're so shell-shocked and unsupported goes up by around 400%. So we're truly learning that care for the care provider, as well as care for our patients who have been harmed, are important processes that we have not really looked at closely through the years.
Now, these lessons that you've learned are things that you're going to, through this new $3 million grant, take into other hospitals in the Chicago area. How are you planning to use the grant money? What's going to go into some of that effort?
Well, the first phase, Gene, is going to be to do a gap analysis in those hospitals, because many of them have really begun to do a lot of great things around patient safety. So what we're going to be doing with the resources is to help them do their own internal look at where they are and help them collect large amounts of data prior to what we would consider to be the intervention. And the intervention is really the goal. It's really about cultural transformation. It's about getting very visible the commitment from both the CEO and the boards of those hospitals all the way down to the frontline care provider that there is going to be a commitment to extreme honesty in communication with patients and families, but also within those who are members of the care team. And we have some methodologies and some educational methods and some software methods and others that will allow us to do the gap analysis, but also begin to do that educational intervention as we begin to help them change the culture in their organization. So there's going to be a lot of aggressive, accelerated change that's going to be occurring as we bring their safety and quality and risk management and other people together in the project.
Is that something that's still a struggle to get physicians on board with, or medical staff in general on board with? Or is there still some sort of reluctance or pull on transforming that culture?
Well, I think mentally they're ready to do it. However, I would say there's still a lot of bad advice that's being given, particularly from the legal community. And I think that there's also some miscommunication that's occurring and confusion around that. A lot of physicians are under the impression that their MedMal insurance carriers prohibit them from having effective communication with patients and families when harm occurs. And they're under the impression that the best thing they can do is not say anything. We've done a lot of work with the MedMal insurers, and they've come to understand the damage that's being done to both the physicians and the other care providers and the patients by taking that sort of deny and defend and putting up that wall of silence. Since we now have the hospital associations on board and other medical malpractice insurers on board, we think that a lot of what have been the major barriers to this are starting to crumble, knowing there's still going to be pockets of resistance. But for the first time, we're really beginning to see, I think, that pendulum change. We are going to be able to, with a lot of hard work, get the stakeholders at the table to agree upon an appropriate response when harm occurs.
Great. And a lot of what the federal government is looking for through things like the High Tech Act and the stimulus law is the role of health information technology in patient safety. What have you discovered that role to be through your research? Has there been times where IT has interfered with your patient safety efforts or has helped to mitigate adverse events? What role does that play with what you're doing?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag right now. The University of Illinois has probably one of the most robust electronic health records in the country. We were the first medical center to actually have computerized physician order entry, where on the inpatient side, for more than 25 years, the only way you've been able to order medications or treatments for patients has been through the computer. From that standpoint, we have seen a lot of improvements in patient safety and have reduced a lot of harm over the ways that's evolved over time. I would say, however, one of the big struggles we have is that the current design of most of the IT systems make it very difficult to follow the story or the narrative of the patient. All the information's there, but it's not particularly user-friendly when you want to go into a chart on a patient you're consulting on and just sort of quickly get an idea of what the story is. And so there's some struggles with how do we take this kind of technology and make it more user-friendly and in many ways more patient-centered. I can tell you, as somebody who's charged with doing investigations of our quality and investigations of our harm events, it is an incredible benefit to have the health record be electronic like that, because I can't even from home, through our password-protected process, get into any of our patients' charts to try to identify what went wrong or what has happened or the current status. And prior to the electronic health record, you could never do that. So I think there's some really positives, and I think there's some negatives that we're trying to work on.
The downside is we're still learning a lot. There's a lot of physicians, nurses, pharmacists, who weren't trained in a IT environment. Today, computers are a little challenging for them. And so now you start getting into some of these newer applications and newer databases, order entry, and they continue to struggle with it. They don't have it in their office, yet they've got it in the hospital. And how do they communicate between each other? There's multiple levels of systems, not only the ones that are being developed by the major companies, but then a lot of the hospitals and health systems like Kaiser who develop their own system. How do we get these systems to talk to each other? And that doesn't even touch on many of the human factor issues that go into play when these systems are launched. And there's numerous examples, like at Cedars Sinai in California, where $39 million was almost thrown out the door because their staff and physicians just revolted because the conversation between what is needed at the point of care and what the technology experts believe is important has not gone as well as it maybe should have at many different points of care. And one example on the human factors side is a lot of the drop-down menus. Many times they're not designed with safety in mind, and numerous events have happened because somebody just moved their cursor a little bit, and one medication, which was potentially benign, all of a sudden gets clicked on a medication that's got a very strong opioid or epinephrine base in it, and that gets through the system, and then the patient has a reaction to a drug that they never should have gotten. So we're trying to learn how to design these systems so that they truly meet everybody's needs and move us forward, and I'm sure we will. It's just been challenging.
Yeah, the other problem, and this has gotten a lot of notoriety recently in many publications, is that when you have an electronic health record, it's very easy when you're writing your notes to use the copy and paste function that we're all familiar with now. That has created an epidemic of problems with people copying and pasting pieces of the medical record from, say, a few weeks ago and bringing them forward to the current day as a way to sort of efficiently write your progress notes. That has created massive confusion in many electronic records because you often bring forward information that's actually untrue or unsafe in your attempt to use technology to make the creation of your notes much quicker or much faster. And that, I think, right now is the scourge of electronic health records. It's very difficult to read and understand what's going on when people keep bringing forward notes from a week or 2 weeks ago.
So there's still a lot more learning to be done on the human side of things to make the technology easier and understandable for everybody.
The electronic health record is a great tool, but it can be abused. And when it's abused, it can be as bad as the old paper records that you just couldn't read what people were putting on paper.
Well, hopefully the work that you're doing will continue to help mitigate that and bring everybody more in line with understanding what being patient-centered is all about. This wraps up our discussion for today, and I just want to say thanks again to Dr. Timothy McDonald and Dr. David Mayer for talking with us and helping us understand a little bit more about patient safety.
Thank you for listening to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast. For more information and resources about healthcare technology and electronic health records, please visit SearchHealthIT.com. Thank you.